exceptionnel.
Sagosen. Sagosen setter det hen! Han setter den! De er i semifinale igjen!
Hello everyone and welcome to the Uninformed Handball Hour. It's Chris O'Reilly with you and a full house yet again with Alex Kulesh.
How are you doing?
I'm Brian Campion.
Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa to you, Brian. And we'll start this podcast with the big news that for the second time, the Velux CHF Final Four has been postponed in 2020. A couple of months ago, we heard news that it was going to be pushed back to August. But with the recent news that Germany has banned all mass gatherings and sporting events until the end of August, it's been pushed back yet again to the 28th and 29th of December, right after Christmas and before the new year and the World Championship in Egypt. Boys, your reactions to the Final Four being postponed yet again.
Was there clarification whether the Women's Champions League Final Four was also on the 28th and 29th? Or was it just the men's?
That's just the men's. That's just the Velux CHF Final Four has been postponed. The women's one, they're still in discussion because in Budapest and Hungary, they haven't extended the restrictions yet. So maybe it'll be possible. There's going to be a series of meetings later this week. I think the executive committee are going to meet and they're going to make decisions about all of the competitions and how they're going to end this season one way or another.
Okay, yeah, because I was just thinking that the women would come in after their own European Championship in December, all battered and broken, and a few pints at Christmas, and then go into a Final Four Championship. But thankfully, that's avoided. But obviously, for the men, it's not that much different, I suppose, because the intensity of the season has just become absolutely insane. To have the start of a league, then this like high intensity game with, you know, it's also two games in 2 days, you know, or two games in 3 days, incredibly tough, and then going straight into a World Championship. I think I can't see the players being happy with that. I can see hashtag don't play the players making a reappearance, because this is literally playing the players. Like, no, this is not thinking about player safety, player well-being at all, and just trying to squeeze out this final bit of Champions League. Like, why do you think they're doing it? Why do you think they're actually trying to make this game happen? Like, what is the prime driver to this? I know it's the last Champions League under the current ownership. Is that possibly part of the reason?
The current TV deals, like the marketing rights.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think that's probably the main driver. I'd say it's more fulfilling sponsorship and ticket money. That's why I'd say the main drivers would be in getting this done. What do you reckon, Brian?
Yeah, I think the response to it online has just been really positive, though. Everyone has been, all the fans seem to really understand why they're doing this. No, I mean, look, it's, when I saw it, I was like, okay, that's, it's not something I would have done. Let's just put it that way. But I will say this, if it does come off and they do actually play the Final Four just after Christmas, for the fans who are at home at Christmas time, that's going to be a very unusual experience and actually very unique if it actually does happen. I think, and then when you're sitting there watching it, I think it'll be great for the fans. As Alex said, for the players, I think it's an absolute, not a disaster, but it's another piece of for whatever those four squads, a huge amount of work plonked in at a time of the season where they normally have their a good rest.
Well, that's not the case for everyone. I mean, like in Denmark and Germany, I think they usually have matches at this time.
But not Final Four matches, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the semi-final and the final of the Champions League, but it is. They would have Bundesliga matches or cup matches. And also, most of the players would usually be preparing for the upcoming championship in January as well. So there would be some handball. So it's not like it'll be coming out of nowhere. But I just fear that at this stage, if you're having the Final Four being played in the middle, now it's going to be in the middle of the following season, it's going to have the feeling of, like, you know, in football in England, like the Community Shield, like that competition at the beginning of the season between two teams, or the Super Cup, they call it in handball in all these countries. I think it's just going to feel a bit like that. Yeah, it'll be a higher level of that, but I don't know. I don't think it'll mean as much as winning the Champions League in that season, because it'll feel so far removed from what all of these teams have currently this season been building up to.
Yeah, it's basically an all-star game. Or the IHF Super Globe just moved a couple of months earlier, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, what's going to happen to the IHF Super Globe, lads? That's the
no
question.
One's asking the real no question here.
Nobody's asking the question, what's going to happen to the IHF Super Globe?
But I think it's clear, I think it's, and it's also quite fair to say that they seem to be struggling with the whole PR side of things of this, because very few people, I haven't heard anyone from a player's perspective saying that they think it's a good idea, and most fans seem to not understand it either, you know. So I think they're losing the PR battle here a little bit. And I was thinking, how could you, or what could you do to make this still appealing some way, and for it to make a little bit more sense? Having the final of the season before in the middle of the next season doesn't make any sense. But what could you do to improve that in some way? And I was thinking, what you could do maybe is you hold the Final Four and you still have those games and they still get the title. But there has to be, I think, some sort of charity aspect to it, where there's going to be, it's all for a cause, because it is the title and all that. But as you guys said, it is a bit more like an all-star game, and it's in the middle of the next season, and who's going to play for who, and it's all a bit of a mess, you know. So, but if you have the charity aspect to it, and look, saying you're going to fulfill these contracts with your sponsors and with ticket holders and whoever else, then I think maybe people will say, look, it's on a Christmas time, bit of charity, they're going to play those games, and there's still a title, there's still something to play for. But I think it takes the edge off it a little bit, in terms of people saying they're just holding it for monetary reasons. I don't know what you think of that.
Yeah, that's a nice idea.
I think it makes a lot of sense. So straight away there, that slightly changed my mind. Like, I also think that this December date is probably better than the August date, because the August date basically had the same issues that this December date has, but it also has the additional baggage of the players coming in completely unfit, because they wouldn't have been training, they wouldn't have had a season, they wouldn't have been in the right mindset to compete at a high level. So that would make it even less of a competitive occasion. But I think putting it for charity around Christmas, as you said, is it's a feel good spin on this. Maybe they should have hired you and the PR team for this, but
I've been saying it for years.
Well, it's either that, boys, or we get all 14 men's teams, all 8 women's teams on the boat. Still option C or D in my mind.
Yeah, but I just think holding it normally and expecting people to swallow it, I think, is a little bit too, is a difficult pill to swallow, I think. So there needs to be some sort of spin on it in some way.
Events have been cancelled in Germany until the 31st of August, but actually the Bundesliga is still up in the air. I don't think there has been a final decision there either. Do we see any sort of resolution coming for Bundesliga? Will they play behind closed doors or something like that?
I think that's difficult to push forward with. Like, they're talking about it in the football Bundesliga as well, and already teams have started to train in small groups in the football Bundesliga, but they probably can survive without packed stadiums and with the TV deals until the end of the season. Whereas I don't think the majority of handball teams in Germany would want or can keep going with, what is it, 8 or 9 more matches without any financial support from the supporters coming in. So I think, yeah, it's just a different world. And I think most of these teams, or at least a lot of them, would be in a much more precarious position, and having to put on matches and having to travel as well to matches would probably see them lose more money than they can actually manage. THW Kiel have started some VIP ticket thing where they've gone back to the game against Gummersbach when they had the perfect season in the Bundesliga and had people pay for tickets to try and like break some record. Teams are trying whatever means possible to get people to pay, to give them money for whatever reason. But I don't think stuff like that will be sustainable until the end of the season. So maybe they'll push forward with matches behind closed doors, but I don't think it makes too much sense in handball, particularly for the domestic league. I could see it happening with the Champions League, but not so much with domestic leagues.
They could play it in their training halls, so that gets rid of the, you know, the stadium costs. Put in the training halls with like 20 different lines on the court, real old school big games.
Sunday league, Bundesliga, yeah.
But yeah, I don't see it. I think the decision to cancel is imminent there as well. Like we saw in France, I think the French league was the first real big league or the biggest league to cancel so far. And they've gone with just finishing the season, giving the title to PSG. I suppose it was a relatively easy decision there. PSG were in fair control of the league, and they've just promoted the teams from the second division and given them, put them in as extra teams in the league for next year.
Very different approach was in Hungary, where they completely cancelled the season as if it never existed. So they've completely voided all of the results from this season. And when it comes to, basically, in that case, there's no promotion, no relegation. They stick with the same teams as last season. And when it comes to the Champions League and stuff like that, they're sticking with the same teams that earned those positions last year. And for the men's side, it doesn't make so much difference because Szeged and Veszprém, or the status quo remains there. But on the women's side, there's been a huge controversy there because Siófok, one of the up-and-coming teams that won the EHF Cup last year, probably would have had a very good chance of winning it this year. A lot of star players in there, coached by Bent Dahl, and they were in second position. So they had beaten FTC, and they were ahead of them this season in the Hungarian League. Now all of their work for this season has been flushed away, and it's FTC who will get that second spot in the Champions League instead of Siófok. So there was a lot of stuff on social media over the last week of players basically saying that this is completely unfair. And you have to feel sorry for them. And I think there could be a few more controversies and a few more arguments in that area.
Yeah, that was something I was reading during the week. What is it with Patrice Canier? And he was saying that, I mean, they were fifth in the league, weren't they?
Montpellier?
Yeah.
They were down a bit.
Yeah, as I suppose they would have expected a resurgence in the second half of the season and to push for those Champions League spots as well, or just go up higher on the table. So there's going to be situations like that. But he said something I thought was very poignant. He said, look, this is not the time to think about rankings, even though they're going to miss out on potentially playing top-level handball next season or whatever it may be. But he says it's more about sport at the moment. So
That just gives him an excuse. He's having a shitty season. It's like, oh, you know, you don't have to think about the rankings. It's we would have made that surge at the end of the season, but, you know, it's okay that we didn't.
He's had a good few seasons, though, huh? You can forgive him for that. Like, he's done all right. Like.
Yeah, he's done all right. So maybe...
Well, let me ask you this then. So what? Why do you think... A league like the French league now waited till this point to cancel, and when other leagues were kind of all canceling all of a sudden in a bunch there about 2 weeks ago, what do you think is in their mind? Is it purely just sponsorship and hoping that they can somehow fulfill these sponsorship agreements still, or what is it?
I think it's just the dying embers of hope. As this goes on in the countries that are most affected by it, it becomes... Yeah, it becomes difficult to see the league finishing. So maybe a few weeks ago in France, they believed that they'd be out of the situation much quicker than what has become apparent. And in other countries, though, for example, in Denmark, which did cancel the league 3 weeks ago at this stage, things are opening up here. So schools are back. There's still a ban on large gatherings until the end of August. And I think that would have driven the decision. But with the way it's going here, it seems like by the end of May, we'll be in a kind of normal-ish society. And maybe there would be a decision made to, you know, allow some smaller large gatherings of, you know, let's say 1,000 people or something, maybe 500. And that would actually probably be enough for a lot of the Danish clubs to complete a season. So maybe that early decision kind of backfired. But again, that's really optimistic thinking. Who knows? Things could open up now and go into a much worse state within a couple of weeks. So, I think with Germany, the decision is imminent. With Spain, I imagine that the decision has been basically made, but not announced.
Alec, at this point, you know, where are we? Towards the end of April, for all these leagues, basically there's a month left in what would normally be the league. I think you just got to... call a spade at this point and just make the reasonable decision and hope that things are better come July, August, that they can start planning towards a new season and just start fresh instead of trying to squeeze everything into a 3 or 4 week period.
Do you think now at the start of next season that we're going to... Do you know at the start of every season you see some rusty performances by certain players or something like that, or teams that aren't really getting into the flow of things? And with this extended... period, are we going to see like an absolute chaos at the start of next season?
Yeah, well, most players wouldn't have passed the ball for months. They wouldn't have thrown the ball for months. Their arms are going to be in absolute bits.
I think some players, but I mean that contact, tackling people, all that kind of stuff, do you know, when you haven't made any kind of contact with people, do you know, fitness might be one thing that they might be able to keep up, but yeah, passing and moving on to the ball and all that kind of stuff, I don't know, unless they have their kids that are 17, 18 that can pass them the ball, they're not going to be getting passes from their six-year-olds.
Have you seen Sander Sagerson's back garden? He's got a little football tennis court. He's got a goal there.
Yeah,
he said he's got a fully equipped gym down in the basement.
He's done well for himself. He's had a good couple of years, Sander Sagerson, hasn't he?
And this is just home in Trondheim, you know?
Well, Kenton Meyer is just going to come back absolutely ripped. He's going to become a line player. He's going to be just pure power.
So speaking of the French League, there was some big transfer news impending yesterday, and I sent it to our WhatsApp group, where Limoges, a newly promoted team, who have made some interesting signings already for next season. They're bringing in Dragan Gajic, the right wing from Vesprem. They said they were going to announce a new player, and they set it up as he played in the Euro. He plays in the Champions League at the moment. He's got 5 letters in his surname, and it's an A and a B. I sent the screenshot or the link to it into the group, and immediately I was like, Luke Abelow is going to Limoges, Lance. He's going to extend his career as he hopes to make the Olympics next year in Tokyo. And it seemed like a reasonable thing. The only problem is that he would be having to share a position with Dragan Gajic in the right wing. But then, Alex, you had your own explanation for what would happen if he joined that team.
Yeah, I thought they would just give him full free reign. He would just be kind of a roaming role where he would receive the ball on a run from any position and shoot, as he's pretty much done for his whole career. But this time the coach would encourage it. So I thought it was still realistic. And I think even the silhouette of the image that you sent really looked like Abelow's kind of profile pic in the French league.
Yeah, we weren't the only people who were thinking that it was Luke Abelow. I mean, there were, I read about 10 or 15 comments and who were saying, oh, Luke Abelow's coming, and all these gifts with people rubbing their hands and stuff. So we weren't the only people who might have thought, I mean, A, B, winger, you know? But yeah.
Yeah, played in the Euro, played in the Champions League. And we have flashbacks to both of the matches we looked back on in the last few weeks. Where Abelow was just going wild all the time, like shooting from anywhere. But then this morning, they announced, Limoges Hand 87 announced that Igor Zabic would be joining, a line player from Slovenia who played with Vizla Płock this season. So he would be coming. And I'm just going to look at the... one of the replies was, is he the Slovenian Abelow? Another one, Clem Sorbier said, that was an exceptional prank yesterday.
So for the second time in a month, we've been fooled by the French media.
Yeah.
The podcast has been fooled by the French media.
No, don't hook me and Brian into that one. to your April Fool's Day. But yeah, Limoges, they got us all. And I think that was part of the point as well. So fair play to Limoges. And I got to feel sorry for Igor Zabic, though, because he's probably the most disappointing new signing second division French team has ever had. Poor guy. But while we have been looking back at some old matches over the last few weeks and trying to make the most of it, the USA has been watching fresh handball over the last week, as if it were live, because NBC and the Olympic Channel have been broadcasting the 2019 Men's and Women's World Championship en masse, and American sports Twitter has blown up with handball fever over the last few days. And I have to give a shout out to John Ryan from Team Handball News and JD Orr, who have basically liked and replied to every single message. My Twitter feed has been completely spammed by it over the last week.
It's been quite a few months now, really, for the US, when you think about it. All that exposure on ESPN and everyone talking about it, and the guys from the two goofballs, what the fuck are they called?
Pardon my take. The two donks.
I still can't stop talking about handball, you know? So there seems to be a small handball fever. Not COVID-19 now, but a small handball fever in the US.
Not quite the same infection rate.
Not quite the same infection rate. No, a little bit slower. No, but the US have a mild fever, let's just say, and maybe some sweats at the moment, aches and pains, but it's all good stuff. So the people like John Ryan and the players on the players like Drew Donald and stuff like that, I'm sure they're absolutely licking their lips at this, because this is, you couldn't pay for more exposure for your sport. So it's only going to be a good thing, just for the fact that people get to know it and get used to it. Even for that alone, even if the pickup of people playing it isn't that great, the fact that people know what it is, I've seen that, and it's not like, as we all know, when people see it, go, "What the hell is that?" You know, at least when you're somewhat accustomed to it, it's an easier thing to swallow, and the culture can pick it up a little bit quicker. That was always the biggest problem for me, anyway. When I was in Ireland playing, that people used to always say, "Oh, you're playing that netball game, is it? Or what's that? Is that no contact netball?" I was like, "What? No contact netball? Well, where's their contact in netball?" I think there's so many mistakes in that sentence, I don't even know where to start with it. But yeah, so just for that reason alone, it's a big move forward.
Yeah, and it really does feel like the US is on the verge of maybe taking its first step into handball. The hype that you've talked about over the last couple of months, hype in small letters, but there's also, so having it on TV has been huge, and actually the TV rights for the Champions League go out to public bidding in this summer. So beIN Sport have had it in the US for the last 7 years and have basically shown nothing, haven't done anything to push the sport forward, and obviously there hasn't been any kind of attempt from the US public to actually try to get involved with it. But with this little bit of hype, maybe there is a chance that some station out there picks it up, puts it on TV, this starts rolling, it goes into the Olympics. Olympics is always a big boom, and there's some sort of catalyst there for a potential bright future for handball in the US.
Yeah, big time. I think the fact that people are also, when they're tweeting about it, calling it handball as well, not just team handball, or is a big win already for the likes of John Ryan. So yeah, it's exciting times. And as you said, with that and ESPN, it's been a big few months for American handball.
This Wednesday, we're going to try something a little bit different. We are going to have our first Handball Hour virtual pub quiz, and it's going to be Alex versus Chris versus a mystery guest who you, I'm sure you all know, or maybe you don't. We leave that open there. And it's going to be yours truly as the quiz master. I've started creating questions. We're going to have something along the lines of 10 handball questions, 5 general knowledge questions, and 5 general sports questions. And the winner will win. We don't know yet, but I'll think of some sort of prize. I don't know what that will be.
There will be a prize. Yeah.
It won't be a holiday in the Caribbean or anything like that, but it will be something. It may be a fruit basket or something, but we'll think of something. I always wondered about that. People say, you give someone fruit as a present, like, what are you doing? Put the fruit in the basket, unbelievable prize. You know, so maybe that's what we'll do for our prize, yeah?
So from the research you've done already for the questions, are these questions that that us and everyone listening, and hopefully you'll be watching, because people watching from home on Wednesday evening will also be able to take part live. So it won't just be all of us, but will it be questions that we should know, or should we be doing a bit of homework before we get started on Wednesday?
I think it'll be a mix of questions you should know, ones you might know, but probably be very kind of Bjorn Patson territory, and then some very simple ones mixed in with ones you could not know. I think I'll try and mix it up as much as possible, so everyone has a chance to feel a little bit stupid.
Good.
And to give you a taster of the quiz, we're going to go through a round that was inspired by a fantastic Twitter thread posted by Rajadores de Balomano just a couple of days ago. And we have some player profiles that we're going to read out. Some are easier than you think, some are probably a bit harder. And we'll start with... Chris, do you want to do yours first? I don't want to go into a dodgy Russian accent straight away.
Okay, I'll go first. So, this is my profile.
A friend to strangers, whether they be tickets or teeth. An unusual line player who could play blindfolded. Known for touching more faces than balls. He was given an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. In attack, he also defended. And he was the creator of another kind of handball, accompanied by a gif of him grabbing another man's testicles on court.
Igor Vori?
Bingo!
I got it by the last bit.
Classic move.
The last line gave it away.
Here's another one for you, Brian, then. So this one. He is brother of Ivan Drago. He was born in Chernobyl. He learned to play handball by throwing grenades. Instead of glue, he used plutonium-239. His arm was considered war material. Good bazooka for arm. More difficult to stop than COVID-19. Smirnov shot at downtime. Na zdorovye.
For someone who speaks Russian as your other mother tongue, you're terrible at doing a Russian accent. It sounds like someone who was from Balana or something and also grew up in Russia. He's a terrible arm on him. And he just, na zdorovye. Oh god. That was Rutenko, obviously, yeah?
It was Rutenko.
Okay. What's yours, Brian?
Well, I kind of lost my mind a little bit when I was doing my one. I picked one out, and then I was baseball commentary of the text spiced up a little bit.
Arpad Sturbik steps onto the court for this 7-meter. He's known, of course, for his general appearance of a retired Serbian builder with chronic back pain. He was born with a limp and has never been able to shake it off. He borrowed his reaction speed from the late great movie star Jackie Chan. He started his playing career in 1958 and shares goal time with Gonzalo Perez de Vargas. Fans from around the world will never forget that time he put his beer down, jumped off his sofa at Christmas to become European champion in 2018. He's so flexible, he can put his foot in the corner of the goal and his hand on the court. He weighs in an impressive 120 kilos, and he comes up now against Nikola Karabatic. Karabatic shoots and scores.
officially brilliant. Lost my mind.
That's class.
The definition of having absolutely nothing to do.
Well, I expect if that's what you've done with your profile, I can't wait to see what you're doing with the quiz on Wednesday.
We did might do something similar, yeah.
Good stuff.
Okay, so Wednesday, what are we saying? We're saying 9 o'clock Central European time, 8 o'clock GMT for those in the UK and Ireland and Portugal. We're going to be live. We're going to send you the link before we begin. More likely than not going to be on Twitter, but we'll see where the best interaction is so you can all watch and take part from home as well, as I face Alex and a special guest with Brian Campion as the host of our first Handball Hour. What is it? Quarantine quiz? No, quarantine pub quiz.
quarantine virtual pub quiz.
Yeah, nice.
If anyone has a better name for it, please tweet us, because I think we need one.
The Handball Hour quarantine virtual pub quiz. It's nice and short, you know. VPQ.
There you go. Good stuff. Brian Campion, Alex Gulesh, thank you very much for your time. We'll see you all on Wednesday evening for the pub quiz. But until then, goodbye.
Na zdrowie.